Today we're going to continue the topic of Tfilat Arvit Rishut, but from a very different angle, from an agadic angle rather than a halachic angle. Basically, we're going to do today is pretty much read Gemara and perhaps analyze along the way the classic agadata of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel that runs from Chav Zayin Amud Bet to Chav Ches Amud Aleph here in Perek Tfilat HaShachar. And so what I'd like to do is essentially to review the Gemara together. It's worth, I think, reviewing inside. This is a Gemara that perhaps some of us have familiarity from some earlier stages of Gemara learning and at various points. I know for me, I encountered this in elementary school, and it's kind of similar, akin to sometimes when we talk about learning Chumash. We learn something at a relatively young point in development, and we're sort of frozen in time, and we never sort of circle back and develop a more sophisticated understanding. And for me, looking back at the story, at least that was my experience. I learned it literally my first year, no, it was my second year learning Gemara, and in seventh grade, and it felt it was valuable to go back over and to look at it through a fresh pair of lenses. I think it's very rewarding. So I'd like to just really to do engage in a close literary analysis of some of the themes and to try to extract what exactly the Gemara really is trying to convey over the course of this narrative. So let's just start with the halachic portion, because as often happens, the halacha and agadata are, we may think of them, and the Maharsha may have classified them for the sake of convenience into two separate categories, but in the Gemara, of course, they're interwoven, and that's going to be perhaps at least a little part of our discussion. So we're going to start with Tilhar in Lakeva, the two dots, and the Gemara, as we saw last time, asks the question, my in Lakeva? The point of the Mishnah at the beginning of the parak is that one can daven all night long, so listening to Asarif Kol Halayla. Why not say more explicitly, directly into the point, that one is permitted to daven all night long? Gamliel says it is obligatory, Yeshua says it is optional. We discussed last time Tosfo and the other views among the Rishonim as whether it's literally optional or it's a relative option, and in other words, vis-a-vis a mitzvah overet and so on. Either way, Amar Rabbi Halacha Divrei Rechovev, Rabba Amar Halacha Kedivrei Ha'omer Rishus. And although the Gemara here does not explicitly side with one view, the Rishonim do indeed paskin that Tfilas Arvis is a Rishus. Okay. The Gemara continues with the classic story. Tana Rabbanan, Masa v'Talmid Echad. There was an incident with regard to one student, Shabbat lifnei Rabbi Yoshua, who came before Rabbi Yoshua. Amrelei Tfilas Arvis Rishus Ochova. So he inquired of Rabbi Yoshua as to whether Arvis is mandatory or optional. Amrelei Rishus. So Rishus said that it is optional. The same student came before Rav Gamliel. Amar leitzvah sarvus rishus rechova posed exactly the same question. Amar lei chova. So asked the student, seemingly confused. Amar lei v'alom Rabbi Yeshua. Amar lei rishus. So Rabbi Yeshua seemed to disagree. So Amar lei, instead of responding directly, Rav Gamliel says, "No, hamtein. You should wait. Achi kansu bali treisim leveis hamedrash until the shield bearers enter the beis hamedrash." Just as an aside, it's interesting why the Gemara chooses the terminology of Bali Trace, and we find this in other Sugyot as well. Why shield bearers? So we know, we're familiar with the butter motif of the Machanta Shel Torah, but why shields specifically? So you take a look at Inaya Rav Cook in his commentary here in the Gemara, suggests something interesting. I think it's food for thought. He says a shield is a defensive rather than an offensive instrument. We know that in times of war, in Halacha as well, we have offensive wars and defensive wars, which simplistically we can categorize as a Mechamet Rishut and Mechamet Chova respectively. So he says, which one is Talmud Torah categorized as? So I would think that the goal of each respective Talmud Chacham is to prove his side correct. So in that sense, it's an offensive war. So it seems unusual at first glance that Gemara specifically uses the shield, a defensive analogy, in order to symbolize or exemplify the Mechamta Shel Torah. So Cook explains that this is rooted in the principle of Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, that both positions, assuming that they're within the orbit of legitimate Talmud Torah and argumentation, so both have a certain amount of halakhic legitimacy and truth to them. And so therefore, my real goal, my purpose in advocating for my position is not, at least on the level of theory, if not psak halakha mamash, but at least in terms of what is qualifies as pure Talmud Torah, is not so much to prove your position wrong, but to defend my position as a halakhically legitimate view among the constellations of opinions that are out there. So therefore, because of that, the Gemara specifically uses a defensive rather than offensive symbolism, which I think is an interesting aside. I also wonder, and Rav Kook doesn't address this directly, they weren't full-throated essays by any stretch, so just short, pithy comments that were collected from Rav Kook and rewritten, but I wonder what he would do with Rashi. Rashi, right here, right, uses a much more aggressive kind of terminology, right? Chachamim ham natzchin. It's not just Rashi. Rashi is getting it from other sugyot as well. So I'm not sure exactly. Maybe you would think at first glance that Rashi, maybe it's a different. According to Cook's analysis, one might conclude that Rashi does not have a literal reading of Elu Elu Tiri Elokim Chayim, that it's not really a pluralistic approach, etc. In terms of the larger issue of how we understand this notion of multiple truths. The problem is, Rashi in Ketuvot and Daf Nun Zayin classically says that at least where the debate is not as to who said something, but rather what is the halacha. I'm not debating whether it was this Tana or that Tana, this Amora or that Amora who said something, but rather what is the halacha, tameh tahor, asum mutar, and so on and so forth. So Rashi says that seems to endorse, at least in that instance, where there's a real halachic debate with the notion of multiple halachic truths. So it wouldn't fit in. According to Rav Kook's analysis, two Rashis at first glance would be contradictory, but it be that as it may.
I thought it was neat to say there was shields because the language of Talmud Torah is shield of
Kaisar.
Meaning?
The Gemara
Mevavasra.
What? Nitiruta.
Meaning right. That's what our defense is.
So you see that Rashi is in favor of Hezda.
That's what keeps us alive.
Right, there's that. Okay.
In the Musaf Rashi, he says Meghini also.
Where?
In the Musaf Rashi?
Yeah. Which is the rascal?
There's Meginim, and then he brings in the
Bechorot.
Of Milchamim
by Milchamashim Torah. I don't see it, I'm sorry. Earlier? Before Sugya?
In the Musaf Rashi.
Where's that?
I have an extra thing.
I thought you meant the Rashi with regard to Musaf.
Oh, no.
The Musaf Rashi. I don't have. I do have Musaf Rashi. Which one is it? It's from.
Balei
Tzvi. Oh, the Gemara Bechorot, right? The parallel Sugya there. Meginim. Aha, interesting. Okay. I mean, the word means what it means, right?
Right.
So, right, maybe Rashi, either way Rashi seems to be, I don't know if they're contradictory, right? And there's Rashi, our Rashi also has to deal with the text of our Gemara. Okay, be that as it may.
It would be like a foreshadow because they're about to be.
Well, I think that there's some intentionality in that, and I think it's right. I think it's part of it. And I think it's also Rabban Gamliel, but we'll have to come back over this and try to analyze what's going on. So in any case, the Gemara continues. So this is a very formal kind of proceeding over here. Rav Gamliel, instead of giving the direct answer to the student, instead he says, well, wait until we get back to the base medrash, and there is this, right, there's this this formal process that's taking place, right? So the shoel stands up, the student, right, has to stand up in front of all the students, the talmidim of the yeshiva, v'amad ha-shoel v'sha'al. Tvilas Arvisusha. So Chova. And so Rav Gamliel Zanasi responds authoritatively, Amar Gamliel Chova. And then Rav Gamliel challenges the Talmid HaChachamim in the room. Amar Gamliel HaChachamim Klum Yeshadam Shecholek B'davar Zeh. And Rabbi Yoshua denies it, right? Essentially, Rabbi Yeshua tells an untruth, which is a diplomatic, or some would say political way, of saying he lied, right? Amar Rabbi Yeshua, lav. Rabbi Yeshua says, right, no, right, there's just simply no one who disagrees. Amar lei, v'alo mishimcha amru li rishus. Right? So Rabbi Yeshua says, gotcha! Right? Aha! Right? They quoted me, cited in your name, that you're the rebel who's unafraid to disagree with the Nasi and holds that it is optional. So indeed, Rav Gamliel puts Rav Yeshua further on the spot. Yoshua, right, calls him just by his first name. Amod al raglecha, stand up on your feet. V'ya'idu b'cha. So if it felt like a formal proceeding until now, now it's almost, right, like it's a din Torah. He's literally on trial. V'ya'idu b'cha, right, the iron, it's interesting also that they're debating tefillat arvit v'shu'ud. Of course, there's no din Torah at the nighttime, so it's like it's a daytime proceeding, right? So Amr Yoshua al raglav v'amar, yomalei enichai v'humei yachal chai lachish es So had I been alive and he were dead, still if my words were contradictory to those of someone who was niftar, so still I wouldn't be able to contradict him. Now that I and he are both living, I am the one, the student who gave this testimony. And so I grant that that was my position, and I plead guilty to this charge. So the Gemara says, okay, so they continue. Rabbi Gamliel Yeshua Midorish, so he sat back down. Remember, Rabbi Yeshua had been summoned to stand. Rabbi Yeshua made al raglav, right? And Rabbi Yeshua kept on standing, apparently for some amount of time, so it became a little bit awkward and frankly embarrassing for Rabbi Yeshua that everyone else went back to their learning. Rabbi Gamliel sitting down, and seemingly the only person who's standing, certainly in this formal kind of way, is Rabbi Yeshua himself. So the Gemara says it got to the point that Shirinu Kol Ha'am, until the nation started to buzz. Everyone who was there were talking about it. Va'amru L'chutz V'Saturgaman, right? They were battling essentially. And so finally they turned to, right? They were distracted from their learning. So they finally turned to the prominent L'chutz V'Saturgaman, right? They said Amod. So they said he also should, in a sense, join Rabbi Yeshua, right? Together, stand up together with him, almost in solidarity, perhaps. The Amad, right? Chutzpah Satorgaman stood up, and Amre. And so they demanded of Chutzpah. They said, Ad Kama Nesarif Nezel. How long are we going to let this go on? On how many occasions are we going to allow Rabbi Gamliel to constantly demean Rabbi Yeshua? B'Rosh Hashanah Shtaket Tziaret. In the context of the question of the date of Rosh Hashanah, very famous story in Rosh Hashanah where Rabbi Gamliel required Rabbi Yeshua to go out to walk with, right, Makel and right, his money pouch and so on the date that Rabbi Yeshua had calculated was Yom Kippurim. So that was on one time, that was one, right, one occasion. B'Bechoras Masad Rabbi Yitzhado Seare is a similar story. B'Bechoras Naflam Ravan Aleph, where again he embarrassed him, he caused him to suffer. Hachanami Seare, now it's strike three already, right? And Rabbi Gamliel needs to be out. Tav and Are, let us go and remove him. And so they asked, they inquired, so new, whom should we appoint? Man Nukimle, right? Whom should we appoint in Rabbi Gamliel's stead as the Nasi and the Rosh Yeshiva, the Rosh Vasifta, as we'll see. Nukmi Rabbi Yeshua, should we appoint Rabbi Yeshua? Somewhere it says that they rejected that possibility because Baal Masahu, he was the one in regard to whom this incident took place. Rashi explains interestingly, Baal Masahu, Bahavli the Rabbi Gamliel Tsa'arot Fe. Which is interesting. In other words, they're very uncomfortable with the situation. On the one hand, they feel the need to depose Rabbi Gamliel, but at the same time, they want to be as respectful as possible of his dignity. So Rashi's understanding is that they would cause him too much discomfiture. The Maharsha points out, it says there's an alternative, or sort of a more obvious possibility, which is that Baal Masahu, meaning since he was the one who was in this altercation with Rabbi Gamliel, it will look a little bit funny. In other words, Rabbi Yeshua will now be suspect as having set up a scenario in which he would have essentially a power struggle with Rabbi Gamliel with an eye toward being able to depose and then replace Rabbi Gamliel. So if they put up Rabbi Yeshua, it will undermine the integrity, right, of his position from the very outset, and his position as the new Nasi will be suspect or compromised. So that's how the Maharsha reads it. Interesting that Rashi doesn't go in that direction. For Rashi, again, it's that sensitivity, that concern for the dignity of Rabbi Gamliel. So they do away with option one. So Gemara says, well, Nukmei L'Rabbi Akiva, sounds like a good candidate to me, right? One of my favorites. So it says, Dilma Anish Leit. The less ways of chosavos. So what does that mean? So again, not 100% clear. Rashi learns again, not exactly the same, but I think connected to what we saw earlier. The Dilma Anish Leit Rabbi Gamliel. The Rabbi Gamliel will think that he is a poor candidate because he lacks zechosavos. Rabbi Gamliel came from a distinguished lineage, presumably Rabbi Akiva. We know everything about his family lineage is just the opposite of that, and therefore they are not going to appoint him to be the Nasi. So finally, the Gemara concludes: El Mokmei Rabbi Lezer ben Azariah. Right, he's going to be he's the winning candidate to Chacham, who Ashir, who Asir, Lazarus, right? As we say, all the Milas, right? He is wise, right? He's a Chacham, he's knowledgeable, he's wealthy, and he has the Ichus, his 10th generation, from none other than Ezra. So for Chacham, the Machshi, the Mefarik, right? If he asks a question, he can respond. Who Ashir, the Yisle, the Fulcha, the Vekisa, who Azal, the Palach. But if you have a question to bring to the house of the Caesar, so he's going to go and he'll be able to offer a bribe that will be effective in soliciting whatever outcome on behalf of the Jewish community. And when Gamaliel will not be in position to advocate against his appointment and to cause him difficulty once he steps into the position. So indeed, he was the one he was the chosen one. So Asav Amrle, so they went, and the committee went, and they approached Rabbi Gazman Azariah, and they asked him, Michalei Lamargalei Haviyesh V'Sivta, right, would the master like to step into this position? So what did he answer? Right, so this is Musar Haskel for us all, right? This is Rabbi Sachs could have told you in the Chassan Shmuz as an alternative recommendation, right? So Rasam Lahu, Ezel V'Imlich V'Inshe V'Esi. So I have to go ask my family what to do. I can't make an individual decision without asking them. So in fact, Ezel V'Imlich B'Divisi. So he went and he inquired of his wife, right? Since you already know that he has the wisdom to step into an important position in the community. So Amra Lay, so she said, well, maybe not. Maybe they'll just simply depose you. You really want to step into this position just for the embarrassment of perhaps not lasting for more than just a short period of time. So Amar Lah, so he responded with the classic mashal, the metaphor, l'shtamish inish yom achad b'chasa demokra, it's better for a person to use an expensive goblet or cup for one day, ulamachar lidvar, and let it break tomorrow. In other words, better to have this opportunity even for a short period of time than to pass up on the opportunity in its entirety. So then she said, hold on one second, right? With respect, right? You're a youngin, right? You're a kid. I'm a lay. Les l'chivarza. You don't have any white hairs. You don't look like you're qualified to serve in this position. So ahu yomas, we all know this in Seder. Hahu Yoma Bartim Yisri Shani Hava, right? He was 18 years old at that time. Misrachish Lenisa, there was a miracle that occurred. The Hajule Timni Sari Dari Chavarta, and he grew 10 rows of white hair. Vahainu Dekamar Rabbi Glazer Nazaria, Arenia Kivem Shin Mishana, Velo Ben Shin Mishana, the Mishnah from earlier in the Masechet, and so on. In fact, the Gemara says, seems that it's clear that that was the conclusion, and they appointed him in Rabbi Gamliel's place. And the Gemara says this wasn't just an interesting story or an incident, but this was really a watershed moment for the yeshiva at that time. So the Gemara says, first of all, Tana Osa Yom Saku L'Shomer HaPesach. They removed the guard who was watching the entrance way to the Beit Midrash, v'nitna lahem rishus l'tamidim l'ikanes, and they allowed all sorts of students to enter. Shahir Rav Gamliel Makriz v'omer, because Rav Gamliel used to announce and say he would proclaim that kol tamid shein tochol kivoro, that any student whose inside is not like his outside, who is not fully consistent, is in any sense hypocritical or lacking in consistency, lo yikanes l'beis hamedrash, was not permitted to enter into the yeshiva. The Beis HaMedrash, right? In fact, on that day, there were numerous benches that were added. There was a debate as to how many benches exactly were added. It was either 400 or 700 benches that were added on that day. Interesting that they're debating the exact details. Right? At first glance, it really doesn't seem that important whether it was 400 or 700. But it's also interesting to note that this too reminds us of the Seder. Why? We have a very similar kind of dispute in the Seder. But how many makos, right? And all the Tanaim are debating it, right? It's a bizarre kind of notion, right? It was this number, that notion, they're all one-upping each other. So it always bothered me in the Seder, and it bothers me here as well. And the question is, who cares what's going on? But it's interesting to see this commonality. So we're going to have to think about it. I think that part of it, what's going on is that Rudenzweig actually explains, I think very beautifully, that what's happening in the Seder is as follows. We all know that the sort of the transition of the Seder is meant to be from just speaking about history to actually reliving those experiences. And so he suggested that if someone goes through a traumatic moment and is saved, for a car accident or whatever the case may be, so they don't just sort of remember the incident in general, that it's common for someone who survived such an experience to really remember each and every detail with tremendous acuity, with real precision. I'll go over every single detail, and it was, I remember the morning, you know, and then why I went on the trip, and then this happened, and that happened, and there was a car that veered in from the right, and just missed him, but then I handled him left, and you know, all the exact details are incredibly vivid, and can remain vivid for literally decades afterward. I know, for example, Yehuda Rochner, who many of you either know, right? Know or know who it is. Camp Stone forever. So he was what?
Last summer.
Right. So I'm saying. So he was there's an attempted kidnapping that he survived, and every year he has a Sudan Hodayad his home and Alon Shvut, and it was a chet to be there 1 year, and he retold the story of how he was abducted, and how he figured out that the driver was in fact not really Jewish. He was just dressed up to be Jewish. It was the long clip that was too long, was awkwardly long. It was a female kippah clip rather than a male one. That was one. I think the music was there, like the music was off, and maybe it was funny. Whatever. I bring the exact some of the exact details, but I remember him telling the story like it was yesterday. I mean, it wasn't just a saying. He took a tramp. And the tramp took a wrong turn into an Arab car. He opened up the car at like 40 miles an hour, and he rolled out to safety. They tried to come back to get him. There was apparently the Israeli, somehow there was a jeep or something nearby that saw him roll out of the car, and the Israelis came to his rescue. Pretty amazing, but I remember hearing him telling the story like it was literally yesterday. I can still remember him. And he had told the story every single year. It wasn't the first time he was telling it. It's like, it was probably like the 10th anniversary or something when I was there already. Exactly. So these kinds of things, for someone who experiences something like that, are really vivid. And so I think that was the conceptual framework that Rosenzweig used to explain what we do with the Seder. And it's as if you actually experience it, and every single detail matters. You can actually get into fights. It was that much, right? It's the same thing. By the way, I think it's the same thing in the night of Tisha B'Av, the argument between Ahala and Haliva, which is equally absurd, right? In the north in the south, and like, you know, my suffering was worth it. My suffering, and of course, who wins? No one wins, everyone loses. That's the point there. But again, it's absurd until you realize what it is to have a mother who went through these kinds of travails, and really on the tragic side as well, and really zone in on each and every detail. So I think it was such a transformative moment. It wasn't like it was last year or yesterday or some other time. It was something really, literally every single detail mattered. They were reliving the moment. It was that transformational and that traumatic a moment to remove Rami Gamliel, the great. He wasn't just Rami Gamliel, clearly he was a towering personality who insisted, right, on absolute uniformity in terms of practice and in terms of very strict standards, and it was a very very much a disciplinarian. And so for someone of that caliber to be removed from this position and to be deposed and replaced by someone else, and then it was a watershed moment in the Beis Medrash, was really a transformative moment. They really relived each and every detail with its subtlety. So anyhow, so the Gemara continues that Hava Kachosha Dati the Rebbe Gamliel Amar Dilma Chas Chalila Mati Torah Mi Strong, and move quickly because we're limited in our time. He says maybe God forbid I withheld Torah from Klal Yisrael. So Achzad Libachamos, they showed him in his dream Chitzve Chivrei Demalian Kitma, white barrels that were filled with ashes. Rashi explains that the point is that these are fake talmidim; they aren't real. Rebbe Gamliel felt very badly. Maybe I didn't by maintaining very strict admission standards, I caused people not to learn Torah. No, they're just, it's just ash. It looks nice from the outside, but really on the inside it's empty and there's nothing of significance. But the Gemara says velohi, that's wrong. It was just in order to make him feel more comfortable, to settle his mind, that he was shown this in a dream, but in fact the decision to open the doorways, to throw them open to more talmidim, was in fact the right one. Not only did they remove the Shomer HaPesach and allow and then bring in all these benches and students, but Tana Idios bo by Yom Nishnes. My entire Masech is Idios, Bechirta, right? One of the great Masechtos in Shas, in which there's no disagreement. In other words, they resolved all the Sveikos on that day, and they basically, quote unquote, wrote or authored essentially the content, the core content of what later became Maseches Edios. Rahu Yoma, the whole Hecha Damina Bo Bayom, Hahu Yoma Hav. It was that day, right? It's that sensual day in their self consciousness. There was no halacha that had remained undetermined, that was not clarified on that day. The af, and this is unbelievable. This is unbelievable. The great dictator who is deposed, but usually run to another country, not only for your safety and security, right, if a political leader is deposed, but also because of the horrific embarrassment that's involved, but for the notion that Gamliel had it within him to care so much about being engaged in the transformational learning that was happening on that day, that he came back and that he engaged his peer with the members of the Beis Medrash, to me is a Musar Haskel of the first order as well.
When did he have the dream? Is this 2 days now?
Right. Probably it's going back. In other words, it's probably not written in straight chronological order.
Okay.
So in other words, it's thematic. In other words, because they did that, because they threw open the floodgates, right? And then
dream after he sat there in Ardali.
Yeah, I mean that's the face reading of it. If you want to take it as sort of a literal historical rendering, then.
If not,
then you can say lots of things. But if you just want to take it, I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying, if you just kind of take it, I think, on the face of it. So if it's literally Bo Bayom, so then if Bo Bayom were the next day or an important day that came in the wake of that, I think it doesn't matter. So that's fine as well. But if you want to take it in that way, I think you would say that as well. I don't have vested interest or a strong feeling either way. Afil Shah Achas Disnan, that Bo Bayom, again it was on that day, that Ba Yehuda Gera Muni Lefnehem Bevesa Medrash Amr Lahem Mani Levo Ba Kahal, right? Am I allowed to marry a legitimate member of Klal Yisrael? Amr Leh Rangamliel Asar Atal Levo Ba Kahal Amr Leh Rishwa Mutar Atal Levo Ba Kahal. Rangamliel, again the strict one, right, that it's a Chova, right, in this case that it's Asar Levo Ba Kahal Rishwa, that it's Mutar Levo Ba Kahal Amr Leh Rangamliel Velok Varan Amr Levo Amoni Ma Avi Bekal Hashem Amr Leh Rishwa Vichy Amun Ma Right, so that's a din of rov that we can rely upon in order to marry an Ammoni, a ger Ammoni, bazman hazeh. They all came back, so it's the original inhabitants, and so therefore also the vabakal and the reshua look for neemar v'shavki yeshvus ami Yisrael of adayin lo shavu. And so here too the Ammonim lo shavu as well, and so therefore miyad hitru lo vabakal, right, and they allowed him to marry. So notice what's going on here, right? They allowed him, right? They allowed all these students to come to enter the Beis Medrash. They lowered the standards. They removed the Shomer HaPesach. They opened the floodgates and increased the benches. And when Gamliel had this dream that made him feel more comfortable, but ultimately that was wrong. And similarly, in this incident, they were able to once again be expansive within halachic, within sort of the legitimate halachic discourse in order to allow the Gera Amonit Lavo Bakahal as well. And so then the Gemara says that Amran Gamliel, after the incident at some point, Hov Hakihava Izal Vachaisel Rabbi Yoshua. So let me go and let me appease Rabbi Yeshua. Kimat Levesi Chazinu Lashisa Levesi the Meshachar. Notice that Rabbi Yeshua's walls were blackened. Tamerlei. So Gamliel said to him, remarked to Rabbi Yeshua, Mikos Levesa Tani Kar Shepechamiata. See that you're a smith. Right, I see that this is what you do for a living. So Amar Leh Yeshua retorted to Rabbi Gamliel, "Oilu l'dor shata parnasa." Right? Wow. Woe to the generation that you are its leader. Clearly do not recognize the suffering of scholars in your generation. Just how far they have to go to support their families and to provide sustenance, to put food on the table. So then Rabbi Gamliel came back to his original purpose. And Rashi says, I spoke against you over much. Forgive me. So Rabbi Shua didn't listen. And so finally, peace. So Rabbi Yeshua forgave him. So then the Gemara says, well, actually, now that he forgave him, the Gemara actually undoes much of the thrust of the entire Agadata. And the Gemara actually says, well, so now that Rabbi Gamliel was forgiven, Rabbi Yeshua should allow him to reoccupy his position. That's what the Gemara says. So Amru Mani is of Lima, who the Rabban is going to tell the rabbis. So Amru Lehua, who Koves, interestingly enough, yet another sort of low class worker, the Koves, the launderer, says, Ana Azil Nago, Shalcher Beshua Levei Midrasha, so sent it to the Beis Medrash, Manda Lavish Mada Yilbash Mada, Manda Lo Lavish Mada, should the one who was no longer wearing, or who was not originally wearing the cloak, say to the one who was wearing the cloak, in other words, the cloak of royalty or kahuna and everything that it represents, that I should wear it in your place. In other words, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah really be replacing Rabbi Gamliel, who's the rightful owner of this cloak. Amar la Rabbi Akiva, who Rabbi Akiva, the Rabbanan. Akiva says, Rabbanan, shoku gale, the lesi avdi tamid, avdi Rabbi Gamliel, the tsarli the Rabbanan. So Rabbi Akiva wanted Rabbi Gamliel to remain the post. He said, we don't want the servants of Gamliel, there's all the people who are on his side, maybe his literal servants or the people who are, right, clearly, they, right, he had backers as well, and to bother the rabbi. So Rabbi Yeshua says, you know what, I'm going to go myself, they're not going to lock me out of the base medrash. Mutav the ikam of the Ezel, I know the Gabayim, I'm going to go to them. Asa Tarif Abava, he came, he knocked on the gates of the base medrash. Amar lahu mazah ben mazah yazeh, the son, the one who is the sprinkler of the ashes, right, of the paradum, in other words. There's the Kohen, the one who, again, who is fit to this position of leadership in the community, maybe the Kohen, right, this is a teacher of Torah as well, that he should be the sprinkler of Vishino, lo mazah ben mazah, yomer lo mazah ben mazah meimecha meimara va'afarcha yifar makla, is that really appropriate? Amar li Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yeshua nispayasta, klomasinu ela b'shvil kvoncha, right? So the whole thing was done for your honor, so therefore we should restore on Gamliel now that you have forgiven him. We'll get up and we'll go to the door of Rabbi Gamliel and we'll tell him. So Amri, but they said, okay, we want to reinstate Rabbi Gamliel, but what should we tell him? Hechi Navid, what should we do? Navra, if we remove him entirely, so Gamiri Malin Makodesh V'in Moridin. So that's not going to work to completely replace Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah because of Malin Makodesh. Nidrish Marchad Shabsav Marchad Shabsav, they should split it equally. So then Asli Kanoi, it's a setup again. Eller Lidrish Rabbi Gamliel Tosa Shabsay, Rabbi Nazariah Chad Shabsa, that's what they should do. Rabbi Gamliel Darshan's three Shabbatot, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah one. Behind, they'll split it essentially, but not equally fully. Behind is Amar Mar, Shabbat Shalmi Haisa, Shabbat Elazar ben Azariah Haisa. And then the Gemara concludes with words that are completely superfluous and seemingly completely irrelevant to the entire flow of the sugya, but still interesting. The Oso Talmud, FYI, if you're curious who that student was, you should know, right? That's why this Gemara is really like Gomer Gemara, just didn't work out for a schedule, that Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Hava. Okay, so that's the Gemara. So there's a lot to say, and we don't have a lot of time to say it. So let me say it a little bit quickly. I think, if you think about this Gemara, I think there are any number of observations, but I think if you think about sort of the themes and the symbols, there are two clear, I think, themes and sets of symbolism. The obvious theme, and the clear debate between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua has to do with this question of inclusivity and exclusivity. But I think that that's very clear. Rabbi Gamliel is a disciplinarian who believes totally lishma, and I don't think for self-interested reasons, but because just like there's a notion of a zakin mamrin, just like we require discipline to keep a certain kind of holism among Kval Yisrael, so it's his job as the nasi to lay down the law and to insist that Rabbi Gamliel essentially give in to him. And that he reversed his position. And that's really his approach. The benefits of that approach are clear. The downsides to that approach are numerous, and this Gemara lays them out. Number one, you end up excluding people from participating in the process, and in our tradition, that we might not be able to include, and then on two levels, both with regards to Torah study and with regard to even marrying into the community as well. So clearly the debates are consistent, Lishita Sahu. Not only that, but you create a culture of fear where no one's willing to be honest and speak the truth. And this is a lesson, I think, for leadership, whether it be communal leadership or institutional leadership, but also leadership. We're all leaders in sort of a smaller environment. We all create environments around those who are close to us, so we need to strike a balance. But the cost of Rabbi Gamliel's approach was clear. When Rabbi Yeshua was put on the spot and told to stand and asked to say what his opinion was, what did he do at first? Right? He lied. He lied. Why did he lie? Because he walks around lying all day long. Clearly, he was afraid. Right? This is the Gemara's warning that lo olam al yatil adam ima yitera v'tel peso. A person should not create an overly fearful household because this is the kind of thing. No one can be honest. No one can be transparent, and no one can tell you what they really think. And in the short term, that might be instill fear of the Lord within them. But in the long term, it's going to work against us. So clearly this theme of inclusivity, exclusivity is part of it. The second piece that's happening, I think, here is more on the level of symbolism of the Gemara. To me, if there's one symbol that recurs time and time again in the Sugya, it's a question or the theme of appearances. And this, I think, is a little bit less obvious. But I think when you look at it clearly, right, it comes up as well. Where do we find the question, the symbolism of appearances? Right? The age of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, right? 1870. The appearance that he's much older. Where else do we find this? What? Why is that what?
Whether they appear toho
toho kibora. The question of whether a person's right there outside of interior. The dream. Right? The dream. What did Rabbi Gamliel see in his dream? Right? What did he see? He saw white barrels that were inside, they were filled with ash, right, which is a meditation, and in fact, it was wrong, right? In other words, he saw it sort of, right? He saw something that appeared one way and was actually the other way, and that dream itself, which gave, right? It's almost, right? It's an appearance within an appearance, right? It undercuts, it's almost a double negative in terms of the symbolism and this theme, right? That dream itself, which gave the appearance of being one thing, in fact, was another. The entire dream actually was untrue. It was only made in order to appease Rabbi Gamliel, right, who himself was wrong all along. The people of Ammon appear to be what? So I was going to say the people of Ammon appear to one people. In fact, when you look at it a little bit more closely, they're actually someone quite different. What else?
Rabbi Yeshua, he appeared to be a regular guy to Rabbi Gamliel, and only when he came into his house, he saw his inside.
Right. Question of appearances. He thought he was like this, like him. I thought there's this wealthy, again, that goes to that. And I think it's actually a fusion between both the theme of exclusivity and inclusivity and the symbolism of appearance versus reality because it's also about, oh my goodness, I thought we were all well off. I had no idea. And the leader was not able to connect to also on a socioeconomic level, the Gemara is suggesting that we need to be in touch with those who are of lesser means, and that it can also and ought be central parts of our discussion in the community. There's a lot more to say, but to me, one of the things that's most interesting and most striking about this Gemara, and that is I've never heard mentioned, but I think it's very obvious, is the theme of students. And this, I think, is remarkable. Of course, the theme of students allowing them to the base medrash for sure. But I think what's not mentioned often and not noted is that the story begins with the Talmud, and the story, as I was highlighting earlier, ends with the Talmud. And then Talmidim, the students, the younger ones, who we expect not to be able to contribute, actually are the transformative figures in this Gemara. It's they who enter the base medrash and entirely change the discourse of the discussion. It's specifically the young one who needs to look old, but we all know is really young, is the one who steps into the Nesias and is the one who's really qualified to create, to generate the right atmosphere. And more than that, it was a student who unintentionally, and perhaps he's traumatized with the experience, maybe that's why he runs away and hides in caves for years and years and years, that or the Romans, but either way, it was who was the one who asked the question that led to this entire narrative, that led to almost a transformational moment, really, right? In a watershed moment in the history of Talmud Torah in many senses, it was the Talmud. And not only that, right, that Talmud, he thought, oh, who is he? He's just a Talmud, right? He created this transformation, and then he was the transformational figure of none other than Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And so the Gemara is suggesting, just as we find in Tanakh or in literature in general, that which frames or brackets or envelopes the narrative is sort of a framing device which really speaks to the underlying themes. I think when it starts with Tanu Rabbanan Masa B'Talmud Echa, the Osel Talmud Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai Hava, I think the Gemara is really trying to say that Talmidim and the capacity of Talmidim and the remarkable ability, and if we're just simply open to them, what a difference they can make, I think really lies not only at the periphery but truly at the heart of what this sugya is all about. So I think this Gemara is sort of a meditation on reality versus appearance, and that we should not be so quick to assume that which we see on the outside is really what we have. I want to say it, the cliche, don't judge a book by its cover, but that ultimately what that leads us to is a measured but authentic outreach to include those who we might otherwise think do not really have all that much to contribute to our base medrash and to our tradition.